Accession number 24711, real one.
1946.
Wilf Turner, real one. So can you tell me first of all where you were born?
In Glastonbury, Somerset.
And what did your father do?
He was, he made wood hills for C&J Clarks.
Oh, right. Wood hills?
Yeah.
And did your mother work?
Yeah, she worked in Morlands as a finisher on the sheepskin boots, yeah, and slippers.
And did you have any brothers and sisters?
Two sisters, one 2 years older and one 2 years younger.
So you were the boy?
Middle.
Mm-hmm. And where did you go to school?
St. John's in Glastonbury. Mm-hmm. And then at 14 I went to Strode Continuation School, which was obligatory if you worked in Clarks or Morlands. It was run by C&J Clarks. Mm. It was an excellent school. We learnt more there than we did the previous years in St. John's.
And what age did you leave school?
The continuation school at 16.
Mm-hmm. Have you done exams? Or?
No. Well, like what we then 11 plus, so I failed miserably.
Yeah.
Only four out of about 40 of us passed.
And what did you want to do when you left school? What was your ambition?
What was that? That was about
1937,
something like that. Yeah. And, well, about 1940, I left school at the continuation school. Well, by then, I was working in Morlands, making pram canopies. Then later on, after it started there, then later on I was a cutter, also known as a clicker, cutting up the sheepskins into slippers and boots. Mm-hmm. And the time I left for the Navy, we were doing a lot of RAF flying boots.
Were you?
Yeah.
So you went to work at Morlands full
yes,
time?
Yes.
Mm. Was that what you wanted to do, or was that what you were told to do?
Didn't get much option. I had did book for C&J Clarks, but we, like a lot of others, we weren't. Time went on at school about Easter, about September, where parents and I would get a bit fed up with being home. They were still doing this continuation school. That's half days. You went Monday morning, Tuesday afternoon, then the following week you went Monday afternoon and Tuesday morning. And got a bit fed up with this, and so I asked the schoolmaster, Mr. Henderson, if he could speed things up there, find out what was going on. And he came back next day with the appointment for an interview at Morlands. That's where I stayed there.
Did you like it then?
Oh, it wasn't too bad. Mm. A lot of places I know have been worse, some better. It was fair.
A big factory.
I don't know how many they employed then, but here at Glastonbury, when they folded, they were employing about 800.
Oh, right, yeah. So it's quite a big
Oh, yeah, it's quite fairly big. Yeah. It was the biggest wooled sheepskin tannery in Europe at its heyday.
So, had you been following the progress of the war since 1939? Did you read the newspapers?
No, Mother used to say the newspapers for me. When I come home on leave, I used to catch up what everybody else was doing.
Right.
Anything a mile away from where we were, you knew nothing about.
Right.
Even in Sicily and Normandy.
But when you were at home, when you were working, did you follow what was going on?
Follow what was going on, yeah.
And did you volunteer, or did you wait till you were called up?
Oh, I volunteered.
Mm-hmm. Why was that?
Well, Father kept us awake frequently, several times a week, by, what was he doing? Oh, he used to wake up in the night having nightmares, and he was reliving the First World War in the trenches. He was 1916 on, and he relived every jury he stuck a bayonet into. And he said, wake up, my dear mother, all right, hurry, simmer down, and he said, go back to sleep. But we'd get that very, very frequently, right till he died almost. And,
did that put you off the army?
Yeah, I didn't fancy sticking bayonets in, but I'd rather stand back and be a 10-mile sniper, like, you know. And, next thing I knew, I was in the Navy, done initial training at HMS Raleigh.
Right, okay, but we won't rush through.
No.
So you volunteered.
Yes.
So where did you go to volunteer?
Bristol.
Uh-huh. And you rolled up, did you, at the recruiting office?
Yeah, I turned up one day, so I'd like to join the Navy. Mm-hmm. They gave me an appointment to go back for a medical. And, of course, being a rather fit, healthy 18-year-old, of course, no problem. And got called up, and I was in the Navy, I say, September 16th. All my friends who had a register for National Service at the same time, most of them went in the Army the following February.
So, because a lot of people did volunteer for the Navy, but they got put in the Army. Why do you think they took you into the Navy?
I have no idea.
Right. And had you played a lot of sport? Were you
No. I never got into football at all. But it's going home with grass stains on me, shirt sleeves and that. Mother got very displeased about it. I was very much discouraged from anything like that, but I did do a lot of cycling.
Nice. So you were quite fit. Oh yeah,
very fit.
Yeah. So where were you told to report to?
I'm joining up. Mm-hmm. HMS Rally.
HMS Rally. And what was that like? Do you remember that journey down there?
Well, went from bus from Glastonbury to Bristol, went straight down to Plymouth North Road, where there's a couple of lorries, some naval chaps there, singing out anybody from the Navy, and they just shepherded us all into these lorries, trucks, covered wagons, and drove us to the rally.
Mm. Had you met some other people on the train you were going to?
No.
No, right, so you all arrived in little suitcases.
Oh, yeah, and a gas mask. Mm.
And what was it like? How did they greet you?
Oh, very pleasant. Oh, yeah.
Were they?
Yeah. Mm. A sprat to catch a mackerel, like, you know. That's
so who did this introduction and told you where to go? And do you remember?
No, not offhand. I just remember our chief petty officer instructor was a London chap named Hart. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, quite a pleasant bloke.
So did you get your uniform issued straight away?
No, but... this is on a Wednesday. It's about the following weekend we got the uniform.
So what did they do with you? How did they introduce you to the Navy?
We had like introductory courses. Like, and we used to get like a classroom, and you had various officers would tell you different things, and the chief petty officer, he would come around every morning in Ree Valley and get us all up, get us going. And he would, you know, he put us right on all Navy procedures and everything.
Because there's a lot to learn, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know nothing about it.
You know nothing, yeah.
You're not interested in it in particular, so you hadn't read a lot about it, had
no.
you?
No. So, yeah. So we had to, so we just got drafted, just absorbed it and got on with it.
So what were those early days like? What time did you start in the morning?
Like Ree Valley, I think it was about 7 o'clock. But looking back, in HMS Rally, it wasn't too bad. Mm. I'd been used to camping in that in the past, and so to me, a lot of it did come easy. Mm. I also done a lot of gymnastics before, evening classes and that, and so most of it did come quite easy.
Yeah. So did you do any sort of marching?
Oh, yeah. Mm. The marching, square bashing, as we call it, rifle drill.
How did you get on with that?
Oh, it came quite natural, but going back a bit, first thing I found I wanted to, we all had expected to do something, like as young chap. So a friend of mine was in the Royal Observer Corps. Mm-hmm. So he got me into it. But then he found out I was underage, I was under 18, and had to leave, and I had a few months in the Home Guard. Mm-hmm. So I already knew the rifle drill.
Right.
So that came easy.
And did you do any weapons training while you were at Rally?
Oh, yeah. Not so much of the rifles we use for square bashing, but the Lewis gun, which I already knew, because I was number two on a Lewis gun in the Home Guard. Mm-hmm. And I already knew to strip that down and blindfold and put it back together again. And then we had everything from 4-inch to 6-inch in the gunnery school at Rally. Mm-hmm. That was quite interesting.
Yeah.
Being mechanically minded, they were.
So how do you fire a 4-inch? Do you remember?
Yeah, they were the forage. There was a trigger. The gun, the trainer. He had, I think, it was the one on the left hand side. You had one on the left hand side to do the training, and one on the other side to do the elevation. And the one on the left hand side, on his hand grips, he had a grip, mm-hmm. hand grip. You squeeze that, and the rod went back to the breech.
So you were always working in teams.
Oh yeah, you had to be team. Oh yes, everyone had to do exactly. But
did you make many friends when you first joined? Or did you all rather stay on
your own? You powered up with a couple, but once we left Raleigh, I never saw any of them again. In fact, I saw hardly anybody. I kept any contact with anybody. I was moved about so much that you never really got to know where anybody solid to, pal up with or make contact with.
So how long were you at Raleigh altogether?
11 weeks.
11 weeks. So you did your square bashing, you did your weapons training.
Yes.
And did you do sort of lots of keep fit? And
oh yeah, lots of keep fit, yeah.
What sort of keep fit? Was it PT?
PT.
Did you do any route marches or cross-country running? Or
not there.
Right.
I did later on.
And what other things? Did you do any sort of map reading or any extra things?
No, we were.
Or signals or.
No, very 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 little. More or less basic introduction to the Navy.
Right.
That's about it.
And at the end of your time at Raleigh, where to then?
Went into the barracks, HMS Drake. Mm-hmm. And that's where you get sorted out and stuff over.
Yeah. So did they give you any tests? See what you were suitable for?
If they did, there must have been a general assessment, but you had no actual exams or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like that. You just, whether the officers or your petty officer, Chief Petty Officer Hart, wrote in individual reports, we don't know. We never heard anything about it.
Mm-hmm. So you all just got sent off different directions?
Yeah, never saw anybody again.
Did you have any ambitions as to what sort of ship you might be on, or what sort of role you might be playing?
Well, as a very naive 18-year-old, I thought, let's see what's we got to offer. See what happens. Anyway, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. Anyway, it ended probably, as it happens, a good thing, because I got out of the Navy unscathed, apart from malaria. And I got drafted from HMS Drake to a place called North Nee 4 on Halen Island.
North Nee
4. Mm. And little camp up Fishery Lane. Always remember that.
Yeah. Had you done any more training at Drake? Were you there for long? Or?
No. I was there for several weeks. And let's see. I got sent home for Christmas. That was to get rid of us, I think. And get us out of the way. And yeah, it was sometime in January, got sent to North Nee 4.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And,
so what was that like? What sort of a place was that?
Cold, bleak, boggy, windswept. And all we'd done there was mainly semaphore. Crumbs of our life depended on that lot. God help us, because we've been pretty hopeless.
It's difficult.
It's easy to send it, but where you got to remember double, because another person sending it is in reverse to you. So where A is like that, you see the person the other way, arms coming out that way. So you've got, what was it? Yeah, you got to just double the letters of the alphabet. So you've got to learn twice. We could learn to send it easy enough, but to receive, to read it, that was a different matter.
Did you learn any more?
No, never heard it mentioned.
Really?
Not Morse.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a pity.
Yeah. And any other radio or signals or
nothing?
Any other training? No. So semaphore they were relying on for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And how long were you at Hailing Island?
Not many, only a couple of weeks.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then where to then?
HMS Helder.
HMS Helder.
Yeah, that's right. Just across the water from Brighton Sea, I think it is. St. Joseph, that sort of area.
Yeah.
That was even colder. High tide, the main... That was a holiday camp, all aluminium, asbestos chassis. I will forget that.
Chalets.
Yeah. And, God, they were cold. And there we'd done small arms firing and that at the Martello Tower. Mm. And...
small arms were those?
Mainly things like Sten guns and an upmarket version of Sten gun was a Lancaster carbine, the Navy light, the same ammunition, same sort of a gun, but you had a wooden stock and all that on it. And we done held a hand with small landing craft. Went down into the, got to march down Muddy Lane to got on all these landing craft, and they had all these LCVRs, landing craft LCP. They were landing craft personnel with a ramp, and we said tear up and down in those. God, when that cold.
Landing craft.
Yeah, beach them, mainly to handle them, read the compass, you know, steer by the compass, and not chase the compass as they call it. And as you see, you want to move back. But the common fault was if you see the compass turning around to the left or to the right, you tend to follow it, and that's the wrong thing to do. And the little line at the front that represented the boat's head, ship's head, you had to follow, get that one and go come to the compass, not get the compass to come to the line. Come to me, get some trouble with that.
Really, that's quite difficult, isn't it?
And of course, having never driven a car or anything, and the instructors accepted it because they knew darn well that it was absolutely new to you, and you just had to practice. And there'd be about 8 or 10 of us in each craft, and then we'd take it in turns, keep going round and round till the session was up.
So how were you steering? With a little wheel?
A little wheel with handles on, you know, a proper thing.
This was the first time you'd actually been to sea, was it?
Yeah.
You'd never been on the sea before?
No. Apart from being cold, it wasn't too bad.
Mm-hmm. What did you imagine you would be doing?
We weren't told a lot about what would be coming, what we were going on doing, but we just realised that was the sort of boats or craft we would be on, not big things like destroyers and battleships and that, and that we would be going into taking soldiers in onto the beach with these craft. And
we
suddenly realised too it could be a bit dangerous.
So you're on HMS Helder.
Yes.
And how long did you stay there?
Oh, it seemed ages, but it must have only been only a matter of weeks before it was all these different places. Mm. And then, from there, we got sent to up to Inverary.
Oh, yeah.
We never got on never saw the town. But we were on Princess Astrid, a cross-channel packet, you know, steamer.
Oh, yes.
And we had to go ashore there, and we're up on the mountainside, and we were literally doing Royal Marine training.
Were you?
Yeah.
So that was quite tough then, wasn't it?
It was. Mm-hmm. And the assault courses made those on the Krypton Factor look child's play. And then we had a tear around, and... we had a rifle and so many rounds of ammunition. Every time a whistle blew, we had to drop down on their stomachs, and it was bucky. And fire a round at a target up ahead, and then every so often there was a big, a gantry thing up, a wooden gantry thing, and underneath it was sandbags on ropes, and the chap at the end was jiggling the sod up and down, and we had to try and stick a bayonet into it. And, of course, that was all right, except the chap next to me, he said, "Yeah, what have I got to do?" He said, I haven't got a bayonet. They're on bayonet shorts. So I said, "Well, don't stick it into the sand, whatever you do." The bags was broken from previous use. I said, "Don't stick it into the bag." And I was just, what silly idiot, done. Stuck it in the bag. And anyway, I fired off my round, and he fired his. I don't know, that sounded funny. He said, "Oh, look what happened to me rifle." And the 4 inches of solid barrel out in front of the metalwork, the wind woodwork, was opened up like that, like a V. The barrel split, and that's because the barrel was blocked with sand. Like he had words said to him about that afterwards. But it was anything could have happened. But as it happened, that the sight went straight up, and so he told me, and. Well, he couldn't use the rifle afterwards, it was useless.
Yeah. How were the trainers? They were NCOs, were they? I mean, how did they treat you?
Oh, not too bad. Well, they had to shout and holler a lot. But that was their job. They had to shout anyway to make yourself heard, because we were spread over a fair area, a crowd of us. You'd tear along, and then you had to go across a wire rope slung between two trees, and you're generally about what? 15 feet off the ground. You had to go straight across that, and you had to lie on it, the rope, pull yourself along with one ankle behind you on the rope, and the other leg hanging down like a pendulum to steady yourself. There's your counterbalance weight. And yeah, you got quite used to that. It was quite fun, actually.
So you were quite agile. You were quite
Yeah.
Because they sound quite, not everyone could do all these things.
Oh, crumbs, no.
There's a lot of drop out.
You had no option about dropping out. You just had to go, and some chaps were a bit petrified, but I thought it was hilarious.
Really? You enjoyed it?
Yeah.
So they must have been quite pleased with you.
Oh yeah, I suppose so. We never had any complaints. The war record there says we conduct and everything was satisfactory, or very good to satisfactory.
Yeah. So did you get any time off? I mean, you've been in the Navy for a few months now. You know, how did you feel about walking about in Navy uniform? Were you proud?
Oh, yeah. Took quite natural. As if I'd been in for years, actually. Yeah. It didn't seem strange at all. In fact, the whole of time, I don't know why, the whole of the time I was in the Navy, nothing seemed strange. Whatever we put to, it always seemed as though it was somewhat familiar.
Mm.
Can't account for that.
No. And what did you do in your time off?
Up there in Astrid, we couldn't get ashore. We had a lot of books and a little canteen on board, and no booze. But we,
were you allowed out? You know, it's HMS Helder or it's Halion Island.
Oh yeah, but it was, I was Halion Island. Was nowhere to go down there. And God forsaken place that was. And other places, you could go ashore, like Helder, you could go ashore, but we've been walking about a mile down this muddy cinder track. Then you had to get a boat across to Brightland Sea. And, or wartime, but it was a bit dark, bleak. It was always dark time we got out there anyway. It was January. And Jeremy just went and walked around and looked at the place and got a boat back. That was it.
Yeah. Did you go in pubs if you got the chance?
Yeah, but half the time you didn't have any beer. But we had other things to spend our money on. Usually we spend most of our, well, I was anyway, spending most of my spare money on food. Any cafes or anything, going, went in. And,
really?
Yeah.
Did they feed you well?
Well, be correct to say it was adequate.
Mm.
At least we didn't starve.
Mm.
But
not as much as you young men wanted, though.
No. But it was, by and large, one. I think some of the best food was HMS Raleigh.
Mm.
But,
so how long were you up in Inverary?
There again, it couldn't have been that many months, because it went from Inverary down to attended Nissen Hut Camp at Beechwood, down near Plymouth.
Beechwood.
Mm. Mm. It's just west of Plymouth. East of Plymouth.
And what was that like? So what was happening now? Did you know?
That was just a summer of parkers out the way, pro tem. So we just done general things. Actually, I think we were remember going out cutting down branches off trees and things like that. We were just somewhere to put us, waiting for before we went somewhere else. Mm. From went there only a week or two. Then they moved us into a very nice place called Tamerton Foliot.
Tamerton Foliot.
It's just north of Plymouth. And that was a place purpose built to house the residents of Plymouth if they had a disastrous air raid. And it was...
Was it a camp, was it?
It was like a camp, but it was all tarmac roads and concrete block buildings. It was all done nice. You had two like accommodation places and a washroom, and that in between, which is shared by the two ends. And there was any amount of those around the place that was going on. It was really glad. Sorry to see the back of that place. And it was so far out in the wilds, and it was a bit like Beechwood, that any military lorries or vehicles going around, if they see any service personnel on the roads walking, they had to pick them up, whatever they were, and take them, you know, because there was no transport, or very little transport out there.
Were you following, or did they tell you anything about the war at sea, about what was happening?
No.
What had been sunk, what had stopped
through? No, very, very little news of what was going on. Yeah. While we were at Tamerton Foliot, we had a load of chaps come in. You couldn't tell what they were. They were, some was in army uniform, some was in navy uniform. One had bell-bottom trousers and a battle-dress blouse. And they just come back, their landing craft got sunk, and that they were sent back from North Africa.
Really?
Yeah.
So did you get an idea of what they'd been doing?
We did chat to them, and we were all fired up with enthusiasm. We wanted to join it, idiots. from there, we got sent on leave suddenly one day, come back, a mercy hour of the morning. I said, right, go on, get your breakfast and report to the office. Report to the office, next thing you mean, you were all lined up and put on lorries and in the Plymouth North Road, straight back up to Helensburgh up in Scotland. And we were there about 3 days, I think. That was another godforsaken place. Although some of them, I think God wasn't from godforsaken, I think God ever got there. And then from there we got... We were all by then. We'd been formed into flotilla. We were 132nd flotilla.
Right.
I forget exactly where they lined us up, and they chose us all. And then we met our NCOs, you know, leading seamen and a petty officer, Joe Tuck, and our officers. And then half of us got put on a small merchant ship. And the other half of us, I got put on the Royal Fleet Auxiliary, the Ennerdale.
Ennerdale.
Yeah. It's named after somewhere up in Northumberland somewhere. And from there, we got put on this. It was a landing ship gantry. It was one of three tankers modified with gantries and a lot of landing craft mechanized LCMs. That was the 108th flotilla, had the craft on there. We just put on it for passage. And that was quite an experience, that tanker. The first time you've been out to sea, since it's modified, they didn't quite know what was going to happen. I met up the chief signaller on it a couple of years ago, and he said, did you realise when we went out there? He said, they wondered what was going to happen. All that weight of all these gantries, I said they didn't quite know what was going to happen and how the ship was going to flex. And the Bay of Biscay was exceedingly rough. Even the merchant seamen said on there. It was a merchant crew, all us Navy chaps with the landing craft and us for passage.
Okay, I'll stop here.
Yeah.
Wilf Turner, end of reel one. Wilf Turner.